From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of October, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in on what's been happening in the world of agricultural news, and we'll hear all about the weather forecast from Eric Snodgrass. Michael came through. There's a whole lot happening in the Midwest, and South America is off to a really good start. Eric will tell us all about that on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day and the week. Hey, thanks so much, Mike, for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your assessment of yesterday's USDA reports when they came out and how the market has reacted over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I think they were one. It was one of the two major supportive fundamentals of the week, and it could be a driver into next week because I think we saw from a supply demand standpoint in that report that the big crop didn't get bigger. And I think that's what I heard, and I'm sure others heard a lot of before Thursday's numbers were released, Todd. I think the trade was really expecting another big yield increase in the soybeans, which they got, but it was compensated with that reduction in harvested acres. And then we actually got the yield decrease in the corn. That to me was the most important feature because it makes us, I think, makes us feel, at least in my analysis, we're working more in a real-time format because of this remote sensing and imagery that the USDA is now incorporating. So I think that was a big deal that the crop didn't get bigger. And then you throw on top of that this harvest weather that we're contending with. And I think the trade, especially today with the wheat market coming around, said to itself, look, we could see even lower yields in soybeans in November, conceivably. So if I'm short right now after this USDA report, given all these factors, should I be short? And then you throw on top of that the outside markets and the fact that I think we may be finally seeing that long-awaited asset reallocation from stocks to hard assets. Gold was up, the dollar was mostly down, and the crude oil stayed pretty strong. And so all those things together would suggest that this is not a commodity and stock market route, that maybe the higher interest rates are finally starting to tick some boxes by investors and they are going over to hard assets. I'd put next week as a pretty important week for both supply demand, weather, and also the macro side.
Yeah, so you're suggesting that there was a bump from yesterday's numbers, the market realizing that, hey, wait, there might not be as much corn there, maybe not as worried about soybeans potentially, and that the hard assets or what's been happening in the outside market has pushed some money flow into the grains or commodities. That's all been supportive. Have they considered yet how much the weather that has already happened might have an impact on both corn and soybeans? And I just pulled up and have in front of me a snowfall map. I knew, of course, that because I talked to my daughter in North Fargo, that there is snow, but my gosh, there is snow across all of the Red River Valley, so that's North Dakota, a large part of upper Minnesota, South Dakota, a great deal of it, though the southwest corner is, southeast corner is not covered. And then there's snow cover in parts of Iowa that I did not catch. That probably won't be so bad, but my gosh, there's just an awful lot of weather out there that's pretty rough.
Yeah, and that's coming from our area of northeast Kansas and Nebraska. And so it does catch a large percentage of a crop that's still out in the field. So yes, this is where it goes back to next week. To answer your question directly, I would think that if the dollar is not sharply higher because the Chinese markets on Sunday are doing okay and the Chinese currency is not going sharply lower and breaking into that vulnerable territory of 7.0 to the US dollar, we get that and then we get the harvest data on Monday afternoon that suggests that we are going to start falling behind. I do think the trade will start to put two and two together and say we're not getting what we need out of the Western Corn Belt, Western Bean Belt as far as production that's in the fields into the commercial supply chain. That, I think, is the next step, the next shoe to drop here. And that's why I think next week's so important. That doesn't mean, though, and I got to give a big caveat here, with the Upper Mississippi River closing today because of this problem in the Red River Valley that you're talking about, we could start to see your basis get in Illinois and Indiana get a little bit washy as far as not doing so good, wishy-washy, because it may start to impact it negatively with supplies backing up. So I think this is the dynamic that we're going to have to watch as far as futures versus cash and what location.
Yeah, I just pulled up a basis chart to see what corn basis had been doing. Of course, it's been closing up. It's been getting stronger. So I take it you're thinking that might widen back out then.
Yeah, especially if the futures rallies. I don't think the elevators are quite yet ready to jump into the long side and extend their needs at this stage of the game. And I think this goes to what's happening with China and the United States at the G20 and what's happening with the United States and North Korea with another possible meeting. You know, we do have to be on the lookout and keep our heads up that maybe, just maybe, we'll see the sanctions ease here against China if the North Korean thing goes well. And that, again, could happen as early as next week.
Hey, I want to take you back to the grain stocks numbers at the end of September. I don't know that I asked you about this, but are you of an idea that the feed and residual number being relatively small there means that there could be a big feed and residual number coming for the December 1, and we won't see that until January, and that could be supportive somewhere down the line?
I think the feed and residual number should stay the same or go higher. And I say that even though they don't use it as a feed and residual number, it's the catch-all bucket number. The weights for cattle and to a lesser degree hogs have gone steadily higher through the last 30 days. And because we're not selling fats at a better price than $1.11, you're seeing a lot more stay in the lots for a longer period of time. So I'm not worried, and I was asked this earlier today, I'm not worried about the corn demand side. Either way you look at it, whether it's feed, ethanol, or export market, I'm still worried about the soybean demand number, especially the export number, because it's still stuck up there 8 to 10 million metric tons higher than what China and some of the private forecasters in Asia are, you know, starting to push out for 18-19. But I think corn demand is very, very solid at this point.
So you're thinking that maybe we front-loaded some of the soybean exports then?
I think we have. You know, they're at 94 at USDA still, didn't change it from September, and there's folks that are at 85, 86, and, you know, their pace of their beans picked up a little bit, but it's still below what it should be at this stage of the game. The big question will be on the beans specifically is, are the Brazilians about out, and do we get some USDA export sales announcements that U.S. is selling Brazilian beans? That will make me feel better about the USDA's estimate for soybean exports or Chinese imports.
About out, but they're have an early started, so January beans are likely to come from them too.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend and stay warm.
I'll try. You too. And of course, it's Mike Suslow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's today's agricultural news. The new North American Trade Pact, or USMCA, is not likely to get a vote before 2019, given the pact year in congressional schedule and limited political will for a vote this year. And that means Democrats could have a huge say in whether the landmark deal is enacted if they seize control of the House. Ag groups have largely backed the three-way trade pact, but many say their main concern is ending the retaliatory tariffs on U.S. agricultural products from Mexico and Canada after Mr. Trump imposed duties on steel and aluminum imports. The president feels tariffs have been very instrumental in getting Canada to the negotiating table, says Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue. With a trade deal in hand, he says the tariffs' usefulness regarding those two countries have diminished, and that he thinks we should go back to the prior relationship of no tariffs on steel and aluminum. USDA might scale back the second installment of its trade aid program, Perdue says. If the tariffs do come off and the tariff impact lessens, it will have some impact over the mitigation efforts, because mitigation efforts were based on the fact that they would be tariff damaged related, though he did not talk about the difference between the U.S.-Mexico-Canada damage. and that from China. From tariffs, let's switch to ethanol. The Casey's General Store chain has announced a new partnership with Prime the Pump. That's a growth energy partner and nonprofit organization dedicated to helping giving more consumers E15 at their local pumps. Casey says it will expand the offering of E15 to potentially more than 500 of its locations over the next few years. E15 is currently approved for 9 out of 10 cars on the road today, and American drivers have surpassed some 5 billion miles on it. Well, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers' monthly flash report says U.S. sales of all tractors back in September were up 2% compared to the same time frame in 2017. For the first 9 months in 2018, a total of 181,515 tractors were sold, which compares to 168,651 sold the first 9 months of 2017. That represents an 8% increase for the year. For September, the smaller two-wheel drive tractors under 40 horsepower sales were up 2% over last year. Tractors between 40 and 100 horsepower sales were down 7%, and sales of two-wheel drive tractors over 100 horsepower were up 29%, while four-wheel drive tractors were up 52%, and combine sales were up 9% for the month and 21% over the year. And finally today, Bayer won a tentative ruling that could slash most of the $289 million award in the California trial regarding claims that glyphosate in Roundup causes cancer. A California judge is also considering the possibility of ordering a new trial on whether the company is really at fault for an ex-school groundskeeper's illness. During a Bayer challenge in a San Francisco court this week, a judge says she'd inclined to set aside the $250 million in punitive damages against Monsanto, which was recently acquired by Bayer. A Bloomberg report says the ruling could put some momentum back in Monsanto's favor as the company prepares to defend itself against thousands of similar lawsuits. The California Superior Court judge says even if she doesn't set aside the punitive damages, she's likely to grant a new trial on the grounds of insufficiency of the evidence to justify the award for punitive damages. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. This agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Agribull's Eric Snodgrass is now here to take a look at the weather forecast. It's been a unique week across the whole of the country. Eric, can you give me your assessment?
Well, Todd, I'll tell you something. This was one of those weeks where, as a meteorologist, I didn't get much sleep. The pattern was so active and so many kind of major things were going on that it was just a lot to keep an eye on. And of course, we had Hurricane Michael. Michael went very quickly from the Florida Panhandle, where it was just 1 mile an hour short of being a Category 5, and then it raced up toward the East Coast, dumping a lot of rain on places that really didn't need it. I'm thinking of those cotton and peanut fields down there in Georgia and South Carolina, and then up into North Carolina, the corn and soybean fields in those two states, North and South Carolina, did not need any more rainfall given the flooding we had from Florence. So the Southeast has really taken a beating, but what kicked Michael out was the front that passed through us, and we had a pretty dramatic swing in temperatures throughout this week. And that drop in temperatures that we saw here in Illinois finally gave us our first frost all the way down here to the middle part of the state. And that first frost of the season, that's actually right about on time. Our normal time is around the middle of October to have our first frost. But certainly we woke up this morning and saw those chilly temperatures as a reminder that fall is actually here because the start of the month of October has been very, very warm. Okay, so that overall pattern shift is going to hang around for at least the rest of the next 7 days or so. What I mean by that is that we dislodged the trough that was sitting out there over the West United States, and it's now occupying the central states. And what's going to happen is we're going to have a couple of lobes of vorticity. These are little short waves in the flow of the atmosphere. They're going to come through and give us a couple of chances of precipitation in the next couple days. But after that, things dry down. Now, it'll be interesting to see throughout the day on Friday if we actually get a little bit of snow. Yep, a little bit of the white stuff mixing in with the rain that's going to spread across the state of Illinois today. And as that system kind of rolls through, it looks as though we might have cool enough temperatures to see some of that snow north of Interstate 72, really north of Interstate 74, but we might see a little bit of it. I'm not talking about an accumulating snow that causes a lot of problems, but a little bit of snow kind of coming through with this system that we're having today. Then, looks like Saturday, high pressure is going to dominate, but by Sunday, I'm watching a system that's going to be coming out of Colorado, and it's going to be actually deep enough and cold enough to be bringing snow to Kansas. Now, Kansas has been in feast or famine this entire growing season. They've either been really, really dry to start, really, really hot in the middle part of the growing season, and then it's just been a deluge of rain for the last several days, and now they've got snow coming in. But after that system moves through us on Monday, not bringing us snow, but bringing us some rain, some widely scattered rain, I think we're going to have several days that follow that where things are going to be relatively dry. So if we put all that back into our temperature forecast, while we're going to stay cool in the near term, we will be moderating some. And the reason why that's going to happen is after that trough was moved out of the west and over toward the Midwest, that's allowed for a ridge to begin to develop along the western United States and western Canada. And forecast models want to let that ridge kind of expand a bit east. And so as we watch it evolve throughout the rest of October, even through a big chunk of November, there are some hints that we're going to be moderating back more toward what you would consider more normal temperatures. Now, there will still be major, you know, fluctuations day to day in the weather, but this is at least a signal that we're not stuck in this deep cold for a long time. So that's our short-term forecast for us, and I'd be interesting to see throughout the day on Friday if we are able to mix in some of that white stuff in here into central Illinois. Okay, if I turn my attention now to South America, what are we watching? Well, over the next 15 days or so, Brazil's eastern growing region, so I'm thinking about Goiás, Tocantins, you know, this region, are finally going to be seeing some of the wetter conditions. They need this to get the soil moisture up so that they can plant. Mato Grosso got off to a pretty decent start this year, which again is their biggest producing state down there in Brazil, but they're looking at a little bit drier than average conditions over the next 15 days. But this isn't much of a scare in terms of you know, getting that soybean planted and getting it germinated. Southern Brazil has been very wet. Paraguay been very wet. Uruguay wet. But I'm talking about Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. Those two locations quite wet to get the season started. Argentina's been a bit of a different story. And I've been noticing that it has been dry in pockets, but I was always curious, do those drier pockets line up with, you know, Argentina's major corn planting locations? And the answer right now is yeah, for early corn. This is the early planted corn. So they're a little bit behind. They would normally be nearly done with planting for that early corn, but instead they're only between about 50 and 70% of the way there. And they want to get it in as fast as they can so that they can avoid some of the later season heat stress. And so there is a sign of some issues in Argentina, but when we look longer term, we don't expect Argentina to have major drought conditions this year. And that's because the weak El Nino that's developing tends to allow them to have normal seasonal rainfalls or even be wetter than average. So as we progress throughout the season, Argentina's not right now one of the places I'm concerned about. If I had to place any concern in Brazil, it's that typically with an El Nino, we have drier risks in Brazil's northern growing regions. But with a weak one, it's always hard to use that as a forecasting metric looking longer term. That's why every week we're just going to keep giving us updates here on what's going on in South America.
Well, that's fantastic and just what we want, Eric. Hey, thanks so much for being with us. That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible.